Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Lee Heisman, and welcome to The Shrimp Tank, where we interview the best and brightest entrepreneurs across the country about the do's and don'ts of how to grow, start, and run a successful business. The Shrimp Tank also brings you live pitches of new businesses across all of Georgia, from young entrepreneurs, from our panel of business owners, to see whether or not these young businesses will sink or swim. Don't forget, we're here every Tuesday from 4 to 5 at Business Radio X. And if you miss a show, you can always find us at www.shrimptankpodcast.com for our past shows, providing wonderful content and expertise from a lot of local business owners that we know. I'm sitting here with my good friend and co-host, Chris Hanks, the executive director at the KSU Entrepreneurial Center.
Lee, good to have you in the driver's seat.
Thank you. It's fun to be in the driver's seat.
Yeah, it is.
It's nice not to have Ted around, right?
That's right. Yeah,
we
can talk about him
now. That's true.
Because he won't go back and listen to it. Maybe we can just talk trash.
I think he's listening right now.
Is it, you think?
He texted me.
So
he did.
We'll definitely talk trash.
Well, you know, one of the coolest things, Chris, in getting involved over at KSU as I have is, number one, your leadership and what you've done over there. If you haven't seen or heard about the KSU Entrepreneurial Center, it will be soon enough the only school in the state of Georgia with a degree in entrepreneurship, thanks to Mr. Hanks over here. So there's a lot of neat stuff going over there. Chris, if you want to share a little about KSU 100.
Yeah, that was actually a lot of fun. That kept me up late at night last night because we had our first sort of round for that. So basically, KSU Top 100 is where we take 100 students. It's limited to 100. So we'll take 100 students, student businesses, and we started the process last night. So we had a big room of excited entrepreneurs, and we go through the process of taking that 100, and eventually there'll only be one where one person gets $100,000.
That's a real $100,000.
So really, right? Between cash, equity, and services, they'll get at least $100,000. And it's really fun. It was just so much energy and such a buzz last night of all of this excitement about starting. There's excitement / fear and all of those feelings that we have as sort of as, you know, at the beginning of our journey. And it's a lot of fun to vicariously live through that.
Well, you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun.
And this is the first year at KSU.
Very first year at KSU, and the first time our inaugural KSU Top 100. So we're hoping and planning on this being one of our signature events that attracts the best and the brightest talent in entrepreneurship to Kennesaw State University. So high school students, middle school students, as they see that kind of enthusiasm, we become the destination point for entrepreneurship.
You know, I love how you have such a local growth in this Kennesaw area. And we'll talk a little bit with our guest who's really big in that Kennesaw area as well, doing a lot of groups. I will tell you, all the work that I do with you, Chris, over at the school, it pays tons of dividends, but I'll tell you where it actually converted for me. I was randomly in a Starbucks yesterday and I ordered my drink. And before I could pay, I had two young men run up that students of yours go, "Lee, let me buy this for you." So it actually worked very well in my favor. Yeah. For once, I was like, "Oh my gosh, I'm getting a coffee bought for me from two of your students." It was wonderful.
Fun. And what was fun for me this morning, just this morning, I'm walking through the hallways getting to my class and I hear students talking about guests on this show. And it wasn't part of an assignment. It wasn't because I recommended they listen to it. I just randomly heard that. And that was really fun for me.
Well, you know, another addition to the Shrimp Tank is we're going to be bringing a student of KSU's Entrepreneurship Center. If you want to share a little of what's coming up.
Yeah. So next week, we'll have a student coming in here who can pitch their business, but also they're going to get a brief opportunity to ask the questions that they've always wanted to ask to a successful entrepreneur. So
that's
that should
awesome.
Be a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of successful entrepreneurs, you know, before we get to our guest today, who's looking over at me and wondering what are the questions he's going to have to answer, you know, I was reading an article. It's a really great article by Adam Grant, a Wharton Business School professor who has interviewed the likes of Elon Musk, Mark Cuban, Larry Page. And the article was amazing. And he talked about failure. What he found so interesting, and Chris, I'm very interested in your take on this. What he talked about, that all of these very highly successful entrepreneurs, they felt the same fear that we common people do, but they responded to the failure very differently. Let me quote, "When most of us feel failure, we walk away from our boldest ideas. Instead of being original, we play it safe, selling conventional services and products. But great entrepreneurs have a different response to the fear of failure. Yes, they're definitely afraid of failing, but they're even more afraid of failing to try. When people reflect on their biggest regrets, they wish they could redo the inactions, not the actions. Do you talk about that in school?
Yeah, we do. And that's a tough thing because we have to demystify this whole idea of failure because so many students come to the table with that fear. And who gets to define what a failure is? You know, sometimes what students will call failure, I call learning. And it's not necessarily, you know, and we don't realize that failure is part of the daily entrepreneurial experience. And it's the necessary hangover of success. So this idea of dispelling that and saying, look, courage is not the absence of fear. It's feeling the fear and doing it anyway. Because even those who work for others, they feel the same sense of fear. But what's that fear of failure keeps people from doing great things. But what's the risk of doing something mediocre for the rest of your life or going through life with untested potential compared to the risk of starting something great?
That's true.
And so we have discussions like that and encouraging people. And in fact, I did this one goofy thing in class for a while where we started off the class celebrating failures. And then it got weird after spring break because it got strange because people were celebrating breakups more than their ventures. So, so let's celebrate a failure. Who failed at something this week? Hey, I broke up with my girlfriend. Then it got weird. So I don't know if that's a great tactic that I'll resurrect, but the idea of like, we've got to create a culture where failure is not only accepted, but it's encouraged. Because that's how I learn faster.
You know, I'll be honest with you, and this is a weird topic to bring up. I remember in my early 20s, and I can't remember last week, but I remember in my early 20s, this concept they were talking about, the fear of failing to act. I remember in my single days when I'd be out at a bar or at an event and I might see a girl that I wanted to talk to and I was very shy young man, very respectful. And I would try to build the courage up. And I remember many times I wouldn't, but then that evening and for the next week, I would kick myself every day for not going up and talking to that girl. And I found that I hated that feeling more than the potential feeling of being rejected. So it was really intriguing reading that article, and that's exactly what a lot of these successful entrepreneurs run into. So I found that very, very intriguing. Well, listen, guys, we're going to take a small break real quick before we bring our guest on. I'm going to have Ryan just talk about one of our sponsors. Ryan?
Thank you so much, Lee. And I'm going to take a minute here to thank our sponsor, Oxygen Financial. Are you praying that your accountant gets you a tax refund this year? If you said yes, then your tax plan has already failed. Go to oxygenfinancial.net to get your free no-obligation guide on 6 ways to save money on taxes right now. Make a smart money move today. Go to oxygenfinancial.net to get your free guide today. Securities and investment advisory services offered through NFP Advisor Services, LLC. NFPAS, member FINRA, SIPC. Oxygen Financial is not affiliated with NFPAS. NFPAS does not provide tax or legal advice. Back to you, Lee.
Ryan, that was awesome. I love watching the vein pop out in your head during that last part when you're saying that. It was awesome. I forget the other ads. We're just going to keep having you say that at the end of every ad. Okay, well, you know, this part of the show, we have our guest who's come out here. Very excited for him to be here. He is the man of the hour. I look over to my left and I see two Chris's here. So I'm going to have to sort of reference last names. But I look at a UGA graduate. For the past 8 years, he's owned Hardwick Solutions and now owns Build Technology Group. Chris Hardwick.
Hi.
Chris, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, so Chris, I'm going to start out some of our questions and I want to hear really in detail. I know what you do, but I want you to explain it. I speak of these legendary entrepreneurs earlier, and there's a quote from a local legend, and I want to say it and I want your opinion on it. I work twice as hard as most people. You hear the giggle. And I take a genuine interest in the success of the partners I work with. One more time. I work twice as hard as most people. I take a genuine interest in the success of the partners I work with. Where, pray tell, did I hear that from?
That's a quote from me, I believe.
That you're exactly right. You're exactly right. Can you elaborate for us?
I've always felt that the start of being successful in anything you do is putting in a lot of work and giving everything your best effort. And I think so many people do the basics they need to do to get to where they want to go. So I like to think that whatever I do, I work twice as hard. All the different partners, I really don't have any clients. They're all partners to me. I take a really personal interest in that company and their success. And I think that's what makes me good at what I do. Because if I didn't care about them, they would just be another client and they wouldn't be a long-term partner relationship that matters to me.
Well, you know, you're one of the first guests on the show that is in the technology realm. We've had so many other quality entrepreneurs that have come on. They own very successful businesses, more the kind of the meat and potatoes of the stuff. of the industry. And, you know, you're in this realm that sometimes can be very confusing for the end user to understand exactly what you do. Could you take a minute and explain what Build Technology Group does and how you work with your clients?
Well, could I say one thing before you go there?
Yeah.
I actually think every company is a technology company. They just don't know it yet. And I didn't offer that quote, but I heard it the other day. And I truly believe that no matter what you're trying to do in today's world, you have some aspect of technology and you've got to implement it. So really, Build Technology Group, what we do at our basis is we help companies realize how technology can be an asset to what they do. Any business, you need to have technology to survive in today's world, right? Email is a basic necessity of what you do, but there's other technology needs. And do you look at your technology as something you have to have or something that's an asset to you, something that you can build and you can grow your business upon and make it something that makes a difference for you? Every one of our relationships and what we go to and Build Technology is we take a very holistic look at a company's technology. We like to start out with what they have today and come up with a technology roadmap and really help them try to use what they have to make it more effective for them and then figure out how to best spend their money on technology in the future so that they have something that they can use and grow it.
So do you struggle with communicating the value of what you do to non-technical clients? Like, how do you communicate the need and the value of what you do to people who don't understand that language?
That's a great question. Part of it comes into trust, but there's also a translation layer that exists between a technologist and a business user. And that's been a role that I've gotten to play through a lot of my career to try to explain that over here, there's this incredibly technical widget. And over here is what you need to do your job. You can explain to me the business need of what you need. I can help you find the right widget and I can put those two things together. And as relationships evolve, you have to have a trust relationship with your technologist. And with that trust relationship, once you can foster it and build it up, then you can really know what you'll need, right? And as a business user, you can start talking about your business need, and then I can find the technology that matches for you.
So, you know, that is quite intriguing. And obviously, you say it better than anybody. I have a real
Thanks,
tough time.
Lee.
You do. It's impressive. And I think you're very articulate. Here's where I would love for you to articulate. You know, we have a lot of listeners that are young entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
They're students that want to be entrepreneurs. They're people beginning their careers. And we've all seen the movie, well, at least me and Chris in our age bracket have seen the movie Field of Dreams. And, you know, the premise behind that is what?
Build it, they will come.
Thank you, Ryan. Absolutely. Build it, they will come. It's our age bracket. High five across the room. So what I find so intriguing about your business is that's literally the opposite road you mm-hmm. took. And if you could explain a little bit more about, you know, you are the opposite Field of Dreams, right? They are there and then you build it. Can you run down that history? Because I find that most intriguing. And this is really a potential launching pad. It was a launching pad for you, and it's a launching pad for some potential new wannabe entrepreneurs.
I would think so. So I would ask yourself, was I always an entrepreneur and didn't know it? Or is it something that I came to at some point in my life? And really, I spent quite a bit of my career in corporate America. I worked for a number of large companies, ended up with a really strong opportunity. And at some point, I realized that I could turn that relationship that I had with this particular company that I worked for into a venture of my own, right? And I took this step out the door and became an entrepreneur on my own. And what I realized, and you're reading through my bio, right? I've always liked to start businesses and I've always liked to be involved in different things. And for the first time in my career, I wasn't just working for someone. I had the opportunity to provide that skill for whoever needed it. Does that answer your question?
Kind of. It does.
So this Field of Dreams strategy, I always found that interesting because, you know, who wants to take their business advice from somebody who didn't wear shoes to work and never graduated high school? But the idea of, like, in starting, is there something that you wished you knew about entrepreneurship that you wished you knew at the beginning?
I probably, you always talk about the fear of being an entrepreneur. And I wish in the beginning I had really understood what the nature of that fear was, right? And I have never in my career been afraid of failing on a project. And that's probably a lot of the reasons why I've been successful is I was willing to go in and I was willing to try where others weren't. But I never really understood that the type of fear of being an entrepreneur and failing in a business is really the same type of fear. And when I took my foot, you know, out the door and I walked out there and I was an entrepreneur for the first time and I realized this is no different than any other project that I've ever worked on before. it's just an opportunity to succeed and iterate and, you know, take on those challenges and accept the risk that I might not succeed.
Fair. You know, Chris, when you did this, how long now has Build Technology Group been around?
About a year and 2 months.
So, and I know you have a family.
I do.
You know, and you jump off the bridge there and open up this business, and you're not some college student at that point eating ramen noodles, and it's okay to eat ramen noodles. But how do you make that leap from, hey, I'm looking back at the kids, I'm looking back at my family, and now I'm going to jump off this bridge and start this business?
Well, I would eat ramen noodles, but my wife wouldn't.
Fair. Okay. Yes, we all do. It's delicious. Okay,
all right. How did I make that leap? It was, I was at the point in my career where I could make the turn and I could go into another corporate position, another opportunity like that, or I could do what I always wanted to do with my life. I am confident enough in my technical skills that if what I was doing today failed, I could always go back and I could always get back into corporate America, right?
Sure.
So I have that security behind me. But really, what was I ultimately really risking by going out on my own? And the answer is, I'm not quite sure.
Okay, that's fair.
You know,
ignorance is bliss, isn't it?
It is.
Truly, ignorance is bliss.
You know, if I at my age, if they had come between my kids going to college and starting my own business, obviously I would let my kids go to college and then I would start my own business. But luckily enough, I had a good opportunity. I had some runway with some existing partners that wanted to continue business with me. So going out on my own was not as risky as, say, a person who goes out the door and has no business at all.
Yeah, but in the past year plus, you know, every time I've seen your office, you have a large staff.
I do.
They wouldn't be happy to know, hey, if it doesn't work, I can go back into the world. They're relying on you at this point. How has that changed the dynamic now that you have all these people? And I've seen their faces. They look pretty happy there. There's some pressure for them looking at you and relying, hey, we don't want you to go back in the workforce. This needs to keep growing. How does that keep you up at night?
It does, and I think it keeps every entrepreneur up at night. But I would say I had a really great mentor early in my career, and he taught me something about being a technologist. He said, no matter whenever you walk into a door, whenever anybody asks you a question, you always have to know the answer, right? You always have to be able to go out and solve their problem, because people look at technologists as problem solvers. So when I walk in the room with my employees, right, I have to have the answers and I have to know those solutions. And they trust me. And with that trust, I would say that why have some of them followed me and jumped off the cliff when they had great corporate jobs? You know, they trust me and they're willing to follow me. And in exchange for that, you know, we have a great team and a great culture and hopefully a great place to work.
So what is the most meaningful thing to you about what you do?
Gosh, I am a problem solver and I'm a builder of things. And the most meaningful thing to me is that I get to do those things every day. My greatest professional fear is to get a job where I come in and I sit there all day and I do stuff and it doesn't matter. As long as I get the opportunity to build and create, whether it be an organization, an enterprise-wide system, or helping someone figure out how to market their products better with a technology solution, I love it and I'll keep doing it.
It's nice. Hey, listen, again, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank here at Business Radio X. Ryan, take us to another little break.
Thank you very much, Lee. I'd like to take this opportunity to tell you about Savant. In business, it's either time or money. How much money does your business lose if your network is down for a day? How much time do your employees waste trying to fix computer issues? At Savant, we have the experts that work on your network to simply make your company run more efficiently. Macs, PCs, mobile solutions, no problem. Savant's battery life never ends. Call 770-438-6240 now.
Thank you, Ryan. We're back here at Business Radio X at the Shrimp Tank. You can hear us every Tuesday from 4 to 5. Obviously, if you missed a show, you can download or replay us at shrimptankpodcast.com. I'm sitting here at Lee Heisman with my co-host Chris Hanks and our guest Chris Hardwick. Chris H is in the room. So I've known Chris for a little while, and if you hear his tone on the radio here, you can see very calm. Nothing rattles him. That's a really important question. What rattles you? I want to know when you're panicking and if you sweat and if anybody can see you sweat. What are the things that keep you up at night?
What keeps me up at night? Gosh, on a personal level, I would say, do I spend enough time with my children? And am I a good enough parent? And being an entrepreneur, as you know, as probably a lot of the people listening to this know, it is a large commitment in your life to to open a business, to run a business, to start something new. And it takes large amounts of my time. So the thing that scares me the most in my life is, am I giving enough of what I have left to those kids so that they'll have a good father and they'll grow up and they'll be happy?
You know, you're coming up to the part of the show here where we have a hot or not. We, you know, the plead the fifth is coming.
Sure.
And we bring the executioner in, which is Hanks.
All right.
Some of his questions are tough. We're going to jump to our hot or not section, Chris, if you want to go away. Because I have listened to Hanks' questions and I cringe for the entrepreneur sitting in that seat. I'm blown away. The nicest man in the world that I know. And I watch him become vicious. The fangs come out. I look over. There's claws there. It's a...
Take special pride if they actually hit the plead the fifth button. That would be fun. So
well,
that's
we'll
what we're
going
that. For. That's
we'll
the goal.
That. Start with hot or not. We'll
Start
get to
hot
that.
Or I don't see the button.
That's just his leg. You'll just hit his leg and say that. But if you go with hot or not, I'll jump in real quick with hot or not, hire family members.
Not.
Oh, you look strange. Is there a reason?
You know, I have never hired a family member, but I did actually used to work with my brother-in-law. And it was a great relationship. We worked well. We did everything together. But constantly, I was worried about how Thanksgiving would go.
Okay. So, fair. Yeah.
All right. Hot or not, business plan, no business plan.
Remember, you're talking to an educator here.
I am. I will say you should have a business plan and you should be prepared to burn it and start over if you have to.
You know that your friend Mike Russell said no business plan.
Really?
The man with the MBA degree said no business plan.
You know, the first few startups I worked on did not have business plans. And it wasn't that they weren't successful companies. It was the fact that they didn't take the time to formalize their ideas. And I think that that's been a worthy effort. But you got to write it and you got to be prepared to shred it.
So yeah. Here's a good one. And I'm really dying to know where you go on this. Pay out bonuses to employees or not?
I did actually pay out a Christmas bonus this year.
Sure. A holiday bonus, but how about performance bonuses?
You know, it depends on the company and the motivation. I would say personally that I'm not a big fan of performance bonuses.
So. There you go. Oh my goodness. The only guest that said this,
yeah.
Chris.
And you know, I'm sure there's listeners out there cringing right now. So can you explain why?
I don't think there's anything wrong with anyone being motivated by money. I just tend to seek people that are motivated by other things. And to me, if one of my motivations for people working with me is performance bonus, then I'm not meeting their other needs. And it's not what I look for.
Chris, beautiful. This is about Chris, but you know, Chris has now opened the door for me a little bit. And Hanks knows where my opinion is. Every guest on the show, every guest thus far has said yes to bonuses. It's a very canned answer. It's nothing wrong with it at all. I actually sit on the complete other side and I sit quietly while I hear it. So it's by you opening the door, I'll simply give my small two cents, which is I feel very strongly that if and when push comes to shove, and if and when people maybe look or entertain other opportunities for employment, they've forgotten about the performance bonuses. They've forgotten about the holiday bonuses, and they're looking at their salary. Then they're comparing that salary to what's out there in the marketplace. So my take is for business owners, put the money into the salary. You get to amortize it over 26 pay periods for a year. I know it's perpetual, but if you're focused on growing your business, that's what employees are using as a benchmark when and if they happen to look into the marketplace.
That's a good take on it.
Those performance bonuses and holiday bonuses are what they're used for. I needed to get a new transmission and it's forgotten about. So thank you for saying that. You're the only one. Hey, that's why I like you.
Yeah. And I've never heard the cash flow argument, which I love. I love the cash flow aspect of that because for those business owners, I mean, that whole cash flow, cash is king thing really resonates. I didn't understand that as an aspiring entrepreneur. I would hear that. I don't know if you really understand cash flow until you have a very successful business and you can't pay your mortgage. You know, that's when you understand, well, cash flow is king, right? So that cash flow argument really resonates with me.
But don't forget, life is a give and a take. You know, you benefit as an owner with the cash flow, but it's a perpetual raise. It's a perpetual bonus. You're not decreasing someone's salary the next year. So there is a give and a take there.
Yeah. All right. Take on equity partners or not?
I thought about this one. I don't know the answer to that. So I'm going to, can I plead the fifth on that one?
We're not in the plea
section. This is not even the hard question.
I thought there was supposed to be a button. I think that there's an opportunity for equity partners if you have the right people and it's the right mix with the business that you're in. Certainly, they have to be the right people. I learned early on in many of the startups that I worked on that it's as much about the people as anything else. So if I have the right team and the right mix, I have no problem with equity.
Last question for Hot or Not here. You have children. Would you give the business to your children or not?
So my father didn't give me his business, so I'm going to say no.
Oh, so your father was an entrepreneur,
business owner.
He is. Oh, you left that one out there, because how much of an influence, if I may ask, was that in your life?
Very much a very strong influence. He was a very hardworking, dedicated man who's went out on his own very early in his career, owns his own successful accounting business, and proved to me very on the value of hard work and reputation is everything. So.
We've come to the section of the show where I'm going to just turn away like a car accident and let Mr. Hanks ask the beginning of the plead the fifth. And it was never that, it was supposed to have a negative tone, but I've watched his questions recently and I plead the fifth section. So you have one plead the fifth.
Okay.
So these questions, and we don't want you to be overly uncomfortable, just a little bit uncomfortable.
Just a little bit, yeah.
So, and you don't... I'm just to be competitive. Your friend Mike Russell did not plead the fifth on any of them.
Really?
So even
And I thought I really went after him. I really did.
You did go after him.
Yeah, I think he probably received it more than any other guest, and he did not use the plead the fifth button.
So just let's putting that as a litmus test, Chris. Putting that as a test, a baseline.
You know, I have to win, right?
I know that. I know that. Mr. Hanks, begin.
All right. Well, now, so with that buildup, I feel compelled to come out swinging a little bit. Would you rehire your key executives?
Yes, I would. I'd have to know what. It depends on the reason why they've left me. But if someone had left me for what they thought was the opportunity in their life and they realized that it was not what they wanted and they wanted to be back with me and we had that conversation and it was candid and it was honest and open, I would hire them back.
And the people that you have with you now, mm-hmm. knowing what you know about them now, would you rehire them if they were interviewing for the job today?
Yes. I'm a very big believer that technology is actually a people business. So we go to great lengths, and I've gone to great lengths in my career to make sure that I have the right folks. And believe it or not, we actually worked it out. I've got some people with me that have now worked for me at different companies for, I think we're at 7.5 or 8 years. So I am very particular on who I work with.
Nice. Okay. So I think I might know your answer here, and it's a good one, but I got to ask, your most hated competitor.
I am not a big fan of professional services organizations out there today. I don't believe that you can build up technology and you can build products and services without really having an understanding and a long-term relationship with companies. So I would say out of those, the most hated of mine are the churn and burn professional services organizations that come in, want to build a product that's cheap. I didn't use the word inexpensive. I used the word cheap.
Fair.
And get something done and walk out the door with the cash.
And when you say professional services and you say build something, and I just want to be a little clearer for the listeners, sure. Do you mean be just a little more specific? Websites, functioning websites? Can you be a little more specific? So non-technical.
Any type of custom development or integration project. You know, okay. there's multiple ways to approach it. And one is, are you building something that's long-term and sustainable that the company can grow on and meets their needs? Or are you just writing a piece of software against a specification to get a paycheck? And I have extreme disdain for companies that build just for the paycheck.
So if I was going to start a business to compete against yours, what's the one thing I would have to do to outperform your company and take your customers away?
You probably have to go after my people. I think the difference of what I do over a lot of it is I spend quite a bit to seek out technologists that can communicate, but also have the technical skills to do the job. And if you wanted to open a business to defeat me or to go out or to go and get, you would have to find those types of people, right? It's hard for a business person to sit down in a room with someone that writes technology or writes a website and have an intelligent conversation about the business side of what you want to accomplish. And we've done a great job of sourcing people that can do that.
So is it a good idea? And we asked similar questions because we love to see pattern here. Is it a good idea to marry an entrepreneur?
I think so. Most passionate people in the world.
And if we asked your wife this question here?
Well, I hope she's happily married. Okay. I believe she is.
Very good. Very, very good.
All right. So if I interviewed your direct reports and I said, hey, what's the biggest thing that Chris needs to work on as a leader, what would they say?
Delegation, by far. I have the entrepreneurial gift of being able to wear many, many hats. And as our business has grown, we have very frank management meetings in our company. And, you know, they've given me those talks to say it's time to take some of those hats off and let us run things and let's start distributing out what you do so that you can focus on what you do best.
So I know you mentioned money is not your motivator, but how much money does it take for you to quit?
To quit? Someone once asked me what I would do if I had $1 million or $1 billion. And I said, I would go off and I would teach computer programming to elementary school kids. So
interesting.
If I have enough money to maintain my lifestyle, that's what I would be doing today.
That's awesome. What's the one thing that I could find out about you as a business owner that you would be so embarrassed that I found out or your employees found out?
Oh, I thought these were supposed to be hard questions.
Oh, he's asking, wow. Chris.
I'm challenging you, Chris.
Throw down the gauntlet.
I know.
One Chris H to another. So I would say that my degree from college is a political science degree.
And that's embarrassing. Why would that be embarrassing?
I am in the technology business and I have written in technology my whole life. I have no formal degree or training in technology. I was that person way, way back in the day that saw a need to have software written and literally went to the Barnes and Noble down the street, bought some books, read them, and wrote my first piece of software.
Is that a strength for you in that you can communicate better the technology to folks who don't understand it?
I think because of how I entered technology, I think it is a strength in a lot of ways. I think I had such a background in communicating with political science, did a lot of really fun, cool, interesting internships coming through college that it allowed me to learn how to speak and articulate problems. And then by learning technology on my own, it became something where I could explain it to someone else because I had to learn it on my own. But no formal training.
So, you know, I'm not surprised that Chris's disposition, nothing rattles him, nothing shakes him.
Yeah, right.
You can see it's an easy path, meaning everything, he just puts his head down and just rocks on. Nothing bothered him in that plead the fifth.
That's true.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't do
that
my
bothers job. Me that nothing bothered him.
I know. I didn't do my research digging up enough dirt. There's no question right? about this.
You know so much about me. I'm a little surprised.
Yeah, no. Well, this is just a radio show. I have those photos that you wouldn't want me to show. I'll post those later. I wanted to thank you, Chris, of course, for coming on the show. Great answers. Tons of quality information. I always learn something. I'm most happy about us agreeing on a point that everybody else has disagreed on about bonuses as well. Love it. Let's thank Chris Hardwick. Chris, if people want to listen or if people want to get in contact with you, pardon me, how would they reach out to you? A phone number, a website? How would they get in touch?
You can find me online at buildtechnologygroup.com is our website. Obviously, I'd love to give out my phone number. That's probably the easiest way.
I think that's the beauty of your technology company. If they can't access the internet, then it might not be a good client for
you. Well, you know, on that point, if they were having technology issues, they might need to call me.
Fair. So it's your call.
There you go. There we go. Let me see.
I love that you actually had to pick up your business card to look at your number.
I am a technologist at heart. Our phone number is 678-269-6359.
Excellent. Excellent. Listen, thank you for listening to The Shrimp Tank. Next week, we have Jason Smith from Mr. Mosquito Service. A lot of people think you can just spray your yard. And it's not true. It really never happens that way. People don't realize this. You need to install a system that actually continues to maintain that air of keeping the mosquitoes away. So a really neat business model. You wouldn't think you can grow a business off of that, but he's grown a very successful business. Guys, thank you again for listening to the Shrimp Tank podcast. You can check us out online. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Chris Squared. Thank you, guys.